Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. A couple of guitar questions today. Question number one, who played the guitar solo on the Beatles song While My Guitar Gently Weeps that was recorded on this very day back in 1968? Was that A, George Harrison, B, Paul McCartney, C, Eric Clapton, D, B.B. King, E, Carlos Santana, or F, Lawrence Welk? So who played the guitar solo on that Beatles recording anyway? And question number two, which guitar record was broken on this day back in 1975? Was it A, the loudest recorded guitar solo ever played live at a concert? Was it B, the longest picking of a guitar? Was it C, the most strings broken during the recording of a single song? Or was it D, the most air guitar windmills in a 30-second time period? So which important guitar record was set on this day back in 1975? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com. And today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September the 5th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1735, that Johann Christian Bach was born. This German classical era composer was the youngest son of Johann Sebastian Bach, and he became known as the English Bach, and was the music master to Queen Charlotte in the 1760s. Born today, in 1735. And it was 67 years ago today, 1958, that Georgia Gibbs sang the Hula Hoop Song on the Ed Sullivan Show. And that was 1958 today. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, The Surprisingly Harsh Reason Gas Stations Play Classical Music. When fuel stations and convenience stores pump up the volume, they're not trying to expose customers to culture. This is written by Jake Rosen, August the 10th, 2025, Mental Floss. Gas stations and convenience stores are normally associated with the stench of fuel and cheap coffee, not high art. But you might have noticed that filling your tank can sometimes lead to getting an earful of Bach, Beethoven, or other classical music, often blared through the lot at ear-aching volumes. Gas stations do this for a specific reason, and it doesn't have much to do with cultivating appreciation for the music itself or attracting business. It's just the opposite. The music is intended to drive people away. Here's why. How gas stations weaponize classical music. According to the Los Angeles Times, the practice of piping classical music via loudspeakers is intended to deter people from loitering in or around gas stations and convenience stores. In 2019, the Times reported that several Los Angeles area 7-Eleven locations had started playing the music to discourage loiterers from asking for money or idling nearby, which they feared led to customer unease. Others called shoplifting as a concern. The idea is not novel. 7-Eleven has been testing the idea as early as the 1980s. Decades later, 7-Eleven piloted the program before offering audio equipment with preloaded tracks to its franchises. Some owners reported the tactic was effective. One estimated a 10% reduction in non-paying visitors to their location. And it's not just in California either. In 2023, Columbus, Ohio, Austin, Texas, Jacksonville, Florida, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Tacoma, Washington, among other locations, also adopted the policy. While business operators might often take a positive view of the music, it has invited controversy. These people, not pigeons. Proponents of music as a loitering deterrent say that people who idle near gas stations can harass customers, create disturbances, and even get physical with employees. Customers, they argue, might be dissuaded from approaching a convenience store with strangers acting erratically in the parking lot. But critics say loiterers is simply another word for people experiencing homelessness, whom businesses have deemed unwelcome. At a basic level, it's kind of about who is entitled to public space, who is desirable and undesirable. Eric Tarz, legal director for the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, told the Times, "This kind of othering of the less desirable population shows it's okay to treat them less than you would want to be treated." So does playing classical music actually prevent loitering and crime? Often lost in discussions of driving away people with music is whether it's actually effective. Why is the music discouraging to loiterers? For some, it might be that classical music is unpleasant to the ear, particularly if one is a teenager. But for most, it's the volume. The music can make it hard for people to congregate and talk. Actual statistics on whether it can go a step beyond loitering and prevent crime are hard to come by, though. In 2023, a spokesperson for the Los Angeles Metro said that piping in classical music at a station resulted in a 20% reduction in criminal activity during the first month. In the UK, railroad firm Northern said playing music had led to fewer criminal incidents. It's possible that installing loudspeakers can have a kind of halo effect. Local law enforcement, for example, might increase their presence near businesses with piped-in music, associating it with a criminal element or problem. Is it the music reducing these behaviors, or the police? The music might also be concurrent with a business making other improvements, such as surveillance or other anti-theft measures. The conversation around music as an anti-loitering practice is unlikely to abate anytime soon. But one thing is clear, the music may have its unintended effect of driving away the customers themselves. quote unquote, "This music is not very good. It's loud. It's obnoxious to me. I don't like it. You can hear it a long ways off. It's very disturbing." One Austinite told Fox 7 he opted for a nearby 7-Eleven that doesn't play any music instead.
Say it's all right. Say it's all right. It's all right. Have a good time. 'Cause it's all right.
Former band leader of The Late Show, John Batiste, "It's All Right," introduces our jazz music news. It's titled "The End of Late Night Band." Talk shows have long brought musicians into our living rooms, giving them steady gigs and creating occasional musical magic, but maybe not for much longer. This is published in The New Yorker on August 31, 2025, by Chris Imida. There's a moment from a 2012 episode of Conan O'Brien's former TBS show that I think about often. O'Brien's guest, the comedian Eric Andre, sits down and grabs a microphone from the host's desk. He then grabs a mic, a coffee mug, and starts directing the band to get into an up-tempo vamp. "It was all improv," he explained. "Every single person in that band was also a band leader, so they pay attention 100% of the time, knowing that at any time it could be them." Andre's stunt demonstrated the comedic possibilities of having a group of skilled and alert performers on the payroll. There are fewer and fewer of those. The late-night television industry has been contracting for years, and musicians have been early casualties of that cost-cutting that started in 2019 and has been scheduled to continue into 2026, with the terminations of the late-night show bands. The late-night format is confronting a variety of challenges, many of them arising from the Internet. Celebrities now promote new projects online. Seeing them on linear television can feel stale. People increasingly watch late-night shows in clip form on YouTube rather than staying up and watching them when they air. The economics of the endeavor make less and less sense. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert was the top-rated program in its time slot by a wide margin. Even so, it was reportedly losing at least $40 million a year. The end of the late-night house band may not be a major tragedy, but a world without it does feel diminished. A band gets energy in people. It makes something feel special. It creates anticipation. The band underlines the live in-person togetherness of the format, which was always meant to have a broad appeal and which was, by necessity, in the early days, of the moment. Whatever replaces it will, if current trends are any indication, be very different. Steve Allen was a pianist, so when he was developing The Tonight Show back in 1954, music naturally became part of the program. The band members started to become household names. This was a new medium, but this was going to be the blueprint of what would be for the next 60 years. At the time, lots of musicians were employed by networks. Even local affiliates had orchestras available to fill programming needs. The phenomenon of the late-night show helped some of them become personalities. A pianist named Skitch Henderson had filled in as the conductor of the NBC Symphony Orchestra, but serving as the band leader on Allen's late-night program is what made him a star. When Johnny Carson took over as the host of the show in 1962, he looked in the format that persists today. But it wasn't until 1967 that he got the man who would define the program's look and sound, a trumpeter named Doc Severinsen, who had been hired as an NBC studio musician at 22 and played lead in Henderson's orchestra when Allen's show first aired. He proved to be the perfect foil on Carson's show with the confidence of a lead trumpeter and the humility to be the butt of a joke. Doc Severinsen was a life preserver for Johnny. In 2015, John Batiste helped produce the theme song for Colbert's Late Show as it took over from Letterman. Batiste's group became a standout part of the program. Louis Cato took over from Batiste as the band leader of the Late Show with Stephen Colbert in 2022. The gig was draining, programming music 4 or 5 nights a week and keeping the crowd energized before shows added up to more than one job. It was overwhelming. Cato found himself too exhausted to cook at night, sometimes too tired even to order delivery. But he learned to structure his life in a way that made it all possible. Soon, that will all end. When I asked Cato what it was means to for culture at large when the live television ban, something that's been an American institution for 70 years, goes extinct, he was philosophical. The format, having this high-level musical and cultural exchange being packed into suburban America's living rooms, is changing, he said. But if we were setting out to make a bunch of money, we wouldn't have started making music. That is not a sound business model. But I think those elements spiritually are things that don't go away. And in local music news, we have this article entitled Drama Series About Real Life North Carolina Rock Band Streaming Soon. This is written by Cynthia Blackman, published in the News and Observer on the 31st of August, 2025. A new show is bringing North Carolina into the spotlight. Inspired by the real band of the same name comes The Roundarounds and The Runarounds, a music drama from the creators of Outer Banks. Set and filmed along the Carolina coast, the new original series tells the story of a group of Wilmington teens who come together as a rock band after graduating high school. All 8 episodes of the music drama series will premiere Monday, September 1, exclusively on Prime Video. Over the course of one unforgettable summer, they throw themselves into the pursuit of their big break, falling in love, getting into trouble, and building the kind of bonds that feel like family along the way, according to Prime Video. With original music and romantic entanglements and the raw highs and lows of coming of age, The Runarounds captures the rush of risking everything at the edge of adulthood to chase your dreams. Starring real-life musicians William Lipton, Axel Ellis, Jeremy Young, Zande Murdoch, and Jesse Gulliher, the show came to be from creator James Pate's time working on Outer Banks, as previously reported by UNC. Media Hub in the News and Observer. When searching for a band to perform in an episode of the hit Netflix series, The Winston-Salem Native, stumbled upon The Runarounds. Now, the band established in 2020 will be center stage in the new series set to stream in more than 240 countries and territories worldwide. The Runarounds North Carolina tour. You even have a chance to see the band perform live. The stars recently announced ticket sales for the Minivan Tour, which shows around 19 cities, including Carrboro, Wilmington, Charlotte, and Boone. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, who played the guitar solo on the Beatles' recording of their song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps? Was that A, George Harrison, B, Paul McCartney, C, Eric Clapton, D, B.B. King, E, Carlos Santana, or F, Lawrence Welk? Correct answer. Answer C, Eric Clapton. As noted in the Beatles anthology, George Harrison recalls the song's birth as an exercise in randomness. I was thinking about the Chinese I Ching, the Book of Changes. The Eastern concept is that whatever happens is all meant to be, and that there's no such things as coincidence. Every little item that's going down has a purpose. While My Guitar Gently Weeps was a simple study based on that theory. I decided to write a song based on the first thing I saw upon opening any book. I picked up a book at random, opened it, saw Gently Weeps, then laid the book down again and started the song. I'll tell you, I worked on that song with John, Paul, and Ringo one day, and they were not interested in it at all. We tried to record it, but John and Paul were so used to just cranking out their tunes that it was very difficult at times to get serious and record one of mine. It wasn't happening. They weren't taking it seriously, and I don't think they were even all playing on it. So I went home that night thinking, well, that's a shame because I knew that the song was pretty good. So a full day's labor at EMI Studio 2 on 5 September ended with 44 half-hearted takes in the can, including 17 earlier passes, and George still unhappy with his own attempts at a solo. Engineer Brian Gibson says in the Complete Beatles Recording Sessions, George particularly wanted to get the sound of a crying guitar, but he didn't want to use a wah-wah pedal, so he was experimenting with a backwards guitar solo. We spent a long time trying to get it to work, but in the end the whole thing was scrapped, and it was around that time that Eric Clapton started to get involved with the song. Indeed, it was the very next day that Harrison called in backup in the form of friend Eric Clapton, both to sort out the troublesome solo and to bring Lennon and McCartney to heel for one last push on that track. The next day, I was with Eric, and I was going into the session, and I said, "We're going to do this song. Come on and play on it," he told Guitar Player in 1987. He said, "Oh, no, I can't do that. Nobody ever plays on the Beatles records." I said, "Look, it's my song, and I want you to play on it." So Eric came in, and the other guys were as good as gold because he was there. Also, it left me free to just play the rhythm and do the vocal. In Anthology, Harrison says, so he came in, I said, "Eric, it's going to play on this one." And it was good because then made everyone act better. Paul got on the piano and played a nice intro, and they all took it more seriously. It left me free to just play the rhythm and do the vocal. So Eric played, and I thought it was really good, Harrison remembers. But one last layer of polish was required. We listened to it back, and he said, "Ah, there's a problem, though. It's not Beatly enough." So we pitted through the ADT to wobble it a bit. Harrison would later say, what happened when Eric was there on that day, and later on, when Billy Preston, I pulled in Billy Preston on Let It Be, it helped, because the others would have to control themselves a bit more. John and Paul, mainly because they had to, you know, act more handsomely. Clapton himself hasn't discussed this session much over the years, but he did say, I knew George was happy because he listened to it over and over in the control room. Job very much done. And the answer to our second question, which guitar record was broken on this day in 1975? Was it A, the loudest recorded guitar solo ever played live at a concert? Was it B, the longest picking of a guitar? C, the most strings broken during a recording of a single song? Or D, the most air guitar windmills in a 30-second time period? Correct answer, answer B, the longest picking of a guitar. As noted in OnThisDay.com, the guitar record set today in 75 was Steve Anderson's picking for 114 hours and 7 minutes. As you probably already know, he broke the old record by over 4 hours. And since you're wondering, the record for most air guitar windmills in 30 seconds is 91. So let's close out today's program with Eric Clapton's and the Beatles, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.